Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 64, Steve Sawyer. Man, Steve is such a great mind. He has that analytical mind. He's had that analytical training. And we spent some time in this segment talking about his background in commodities training and how he's been able to bring that into Amazon and the skill sets specifically that he has learned. So let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. Man, and tonight's guest, I am so jazzed. I've been chasing this guy for quite a while because he has had an incredible year. He had a great year the year before, but this past year has just been a great year. And what I think is I can't wait to get into the discussion to talk about his expansion. I call it an expansion. He calls it, he's following wherever the market is that he can apply his skill, and we're going to talk about that. Hey, welcome, Steve Sawyer. Welcome, Steve.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
Man, I appreciate you taking the time. I know you are a busy man. Man, you had a great year last year. Did you think, you know, I guess it was a couple of years ago, you and Andy Slammons and I were sitting on a couch in Texas, in a lounge, matter of fact, and we were sitting there chatting, and you were talking about your experience as a commodity trader, and I want to talk about that. And both Andy and I left the conversation because we were, you know, we shared a room. We're like, oh my God, we just met the smartest guy we ever met, because you talked about things at such a high level 2 years ago in the arbitrage world. Now, maybe some of them are a little more common today, but you were speaking at a higher level 2 years ago. So clearly you brought that to the table. So tell us about how you gained those skills.
Well, I was hired in college. I graduated with a business degree with a statistical minor. I actually started college as a chemical engineer, and I switched into business because they only go to class 3 days a week, and the money was better, the future. So, but I was hired right out of college as a commodity trader by Pillsbury, and we traded the cash markets, which is the actual physical product itself. It's not the futures market like you see the guys selling in the pits and stuff like that. And so that's true arbitrage, where you can actually put down both a buy and a sell, and you're playing all the different ways that arbitrage actually occurs. Not just, you know, we do it in Amazon a lot with time spreads and geographical spreads or commodity spreads, but over there, you can actually put down both legs and do all sorts of crazy stuff. But a lot of those skills apply to this. In fact, they're the same skills.
And I think, though, you know, but you're starting from a different place. You know, as a matter of fact, today, for some reason, I noticed maybe 20 or 30 new people introducing themselves to multiple groups that I'm in, right? And I think to myself, man, they're just getting started today. You got to start from a much more advanced period of time. Now, you had to learn the language of Amazon selling or eBay, whichever, right? But you already had the technical arbitrage piece: buy it low, sell it high, sell it fast, the velocity, all that stuff. You've already had that skill set. Was that more in college, or did you get it on the job? I mean, when you went to that job at Pillsbury, did you feel like you were prepared for that job?
That's a great question. You know what? The weirdest part about that is I think it's an inherent structure on how we're built, because my brother was hired in a different company at Cargill in the same position. And we actually, when we got hired, we take personality tests and all sorts of stuff. And so I think it's some about how you're bent.
What did your parents do?
My mom was a school teacher, and
what did she teach?
Elementary school.
So, I mean, was she a math teacher, English, reading?
Elementary, first, second, okay. Third grade. I mean, they teach everything. But I think I get a lot of where I come from my mom's side of the family, the grandparents. They're Electrolux salesmen. Door to door.
So they were in the suits, coming in the door, putting dust down on the carpet, and then cleaning it.
Oh yeah, high level stuff too. I mean, they went on the trips, they won the awards, and and stand around and, you know, listen to my grandpa, my uncles, and that kind of stuff talk about it. It's really phenomenal. And it's really fun.
So when the conversations, I don't know if your grandparents are still alive, but if, even with your uncles and stuff now, have you had the conversation about what you do now with them?
No, they're long gone.
Okay.
Out of the communication, yeah.
Okay. All right. Because I would love to see what their reaction would be. Because could you imagine somebody with that skill set out there today? You know, I mean, it'd be incredible. You know, it's just so the selling. That's hardcore selling, right? I mean, that was.
Oh, they talk about putting their foot in the door and getting the door hitting you in the nose, and I mean the whole nine. I mean everything. And they sold in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. You know. I mean,
okay. So you had to go door to door. There was no other way to communicate. I mean, that was it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I mean, you got to figure the Electrolux was the Cadillac. When we were talking about Cadillac vacuum cleaners, we're talking 5, 6, 7 times more expensive than the other products that were out there at the time. So
that's great. That's great. So you're right. So I think you are wired that way. You're geared that way. Was there talk? Do you remember a conversation even as a young man when you took that job? Do you remember the conversations, and did it push you further? I mean, did you feel like you had something because of that? You were able to did it give you an edge? Did it give you confidence?
You know, I don't know. It's just kind of the way it feels. It's hard to explain. I think it's that exposure to that perspective. And I think that's so important. It's been so fortunate for me to have that. And one of the neat things about what I do now is how I can teach that going forward. So, I mean, one of the things that I task myself with here is my children work for me and their friends work for me. And what I think is important, what I try to do them is teach them how entrepreneurial works, how it really works. It's not what they think it is. It's the real hard hustle, the real hard work. And I think it's phenomenal. I just feel I get so much reward working with them and seeing planting those little acorns that can grow later and develop. And I know that I will not be around to see the fruits of that process, but it's just fun.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point. Are you going to encourage them to go to college?
Yeah. You know, okay. I don't have the same view about college. I think traditional. I think school is important. I really do. But the funny part is I think we put too much emphasis on being great at everything instead of super awesome at one thing. Mm. And I don't disagree that we need to put on a foundation in school. But I want a guy who is the best of the best of the best. And I don't care if he can add 2 + 2. But if he's my doctor and he's the best hip replacement surgeon in the world, that's the guy I want.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, it's sitting there thinking about that. You know, I'm thinking you are teaching these kids a life skill that is so lacking. You know, it's interesting you say this because one of our local high schools here, I saw something the other day that I think at Temple University, they're working with them on engineering. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, it's about time. You know, I mean, this is it's a big public high school. Why not pick those kids who have that whatever it takes to be that engineer and get them in early and start developing them. Let them get in there and start figuring it out and teach them that skill set, because that skill set is going to be, you know, it's going to give them such a big advantage. If your kids have that, I mean, well, tell me, you have what, two boys?
I have
Four boys and a girl. Have you seen, do they have that same drive that you got from your uncles and your grandfather? Have you seen that?
I got two that are definitely lit. The other ones, the skills that I teach them and what we learn is, I think we all have them. It's just they get to see them and apply them otherwise. It's kind of like when people say, well, I'm not a salesman. And I go, that's the furthest thing from the truth. You sell everybody everything every day.
Right.
I mean, you're convincing your wife that you like this movie versus that movie. So I, you know, it helps them be more well-rounded, but it really gives them that real life ability, that
That it's a foundation. That's a life foundation, because you're right. You're going to use that no matter what you do, whether you're a teacher and you're trying to convince kids that they need to learn, right? Or you're in sales, or you're, you know, it's interesting. And the two that are shining in it, that are lit in that, with your term, they might never have found that had you not, you know, shown them that. They might have just been sitting in a classroom bored to death, and acting out because they're bored, you know, because they need to be that energetic kind of, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think that's so cool. I used to say that about Boy Scouts, the Cub Scouts especially. My boys are both Eagle Scouts. And I remember, you know, you got exposed to so many things that you're hopeful that they'll find something that they really could find a passion for. That's what I always liked about the early stages. You know, they've seen everything. You know, you're teaching them every skill. So I see that. That's really neat that you're doing that. And, you know, can you see those two that are shining in it? Do you think they'll keep this side hustle going? Is this going to be part of their nature, do you think?
I think so. I think so. My 13-year-old is already, he's already got four of his friends, and they're putting together a Kickstarter, creating a card game. As near as I can tell, it's a card game modeled after the kittens.
Okay, yeah,
the exploding
yeah,
kittens,
kill
but
the
it's
kittens,
not
yeah,
it's
right.
not the same. But and they've got they're just finishing up the art. They're going to be rolling it out on Kickstarter. I mean, these are 12 and 13-year-olds. I mean, eighth graders.
So, you know, think about the limiting beliefs. And I think that, you know, I think about limiting beliefs a lot because they're self-imposed, I think, right? And so you've now taken that away from those kids. What's their limit? It doesn't sound like they have one, right? It sounds like, why can't we just start a game and put it out at Kickstarter and do it ourselves, right? At 13, to understand that, wow.
Oh yeah, yeah, and that's the other thing I teach them is I don't mind failing. In fact, I don't mind rolling everything because I'll never miss a meal. I'll never be without a house. Without a roof over my head because of what my ability, my confidence in my ability. Now, granted, you could get health issues and all that other stuff, but as a general rule, you know, my skills carry through. And being able to recognize value and doing these things, and if I can pass that on, that confidence and that ability, they don't have to – I don't want to say live in fear because that's not the right word. But it just puts you – you can just take more risks without worrying, you know?
Well, and tell me, so would you say that that's the reason that you had incredible explosive growth this last year is because you just hunkered down and applied that – confidence you started hitting a groove? What would you give me the reason that you're up 4x?
Oh, well, this year was all it's kind of like if you're a history buff, I'm a strategy guy. It's kind of like the Battle of the Bulge from the German side. It was about taking territory. It's about throwing everything about just taking territory and, you know, trying to tackle the entire backfield, and then we'll throw everybody out and see who's got the ball. And so that was the strategy this year. We sacrificed some points to do it, and we knew that going in.
So tell me what that means. Tell me what the points, the metaphor points, what does that mean?
Oh, profit.
What did you lose?
Profit.
Okay, so you gave up some profit because you wanted to – was it expand into other categories? Was it squeeze out competitors? What was it?
Applying the idea of arbitrage, which is a temporary window of opportunity. And so this window is open temporarily, so we want to get as much through it as fast as possible. And so right now we see an opportunity to get out there and really capture some understanding of new horizons, really the wild, wild west, so to speak. I'm talking in metaphors. I'm just trying to think of –
No, I get it. So let me just take this, right? So
yeah.
You're selling over in Europe.
Yeah.
Right. And you're, you know, I don't think it's I think we could talk about it. Right. 25% of your business now is overseas.
Correct.
That was intentional. Correct.
Absolutely. We actually throw products out there that we don't understand yet. You know,
because let's logically say you're going to be first to market. Right. Because especially if you're bringing it to market.
Correct.
But are you trying to figure out the market there? Is that what you're probing? I mean, it sounds like you're probing.
Oh, of course. Of course. You know, a portion, about 20% of that is going to reap great fruits and great rewards. And I mean, how many times have you talked to a guy from, you know, that's an FBA guy or whatever, they go, I'm going shopping for this, and then I ran into this, and this is my moneymaker all of a sudden. I was going in looking for this, and I found this, and all of a sudden this became the one thing that I buy for the next 3 weeks, and it's the gold mine. And so we a lot of times we start one direction and we end up another, and that's what I always say, movement is important. You've got to be moving. And because movement creates opportunity. So
do you has
too much.
No, I love it because I just, you know, my mind is racing. That's the problem.
Yeah,
you know, that's
no
one
problem.
Of the things I challenge to myself to put the work. My mind goes so fast on this stuff. And I'm thinking about, you know, you're selling things in Europe. Does that teach you lessons about the U.S. or vice versa? Now, common sense would tell me that, you know, frozen selling in the U.S., it's going to sell like wildfire in Europe, right? That just common sense, because they're not going to have the distribution channels we have here. They're not going to have near the opportunity to buy. So you're going to bring it over there. Those things make sense to me. But what are you learning by selling in Europe? Can you apply it back to the U.S.?
It's a good question. We apply more with what we learn in the U.S. because it's a more mature market. So we take the lessons we learn in the U.S., and the European market's less robust. It's not less intelligent, okay? The processes of bringing products to market and things like that and efficiencies are there. In fact, you know, there's lots of people that are private labeling and shipping from China into the UK and things like that. What we bring is actually the evolution of Amazon. And Amazon is a market disruptor. They've created a new style of channel. And it's causing problems, but it's an advantage if you understand it. And
so let's talk about that, right?
Yeah.
So it's a disruptor because they're delivering to the home. Or is Amazon one of the only distributors to the home? Because back in the day, you know, there were small shops in Europe everywhere, right? So is that what's causing the disruption?
No, it's the channel of Amazon itself. It's the lowering of the opportunity for anybody can enter. I mean, anybody can enter the marketplace with lower levels of capital.
So they're not building a brick and mortar, expensive land, right, where you can't even buy land in some of those countries. And so they're able to bring commodities to market that in the past were controlled by a few.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Same thing that's happening here. Oh, just think Amazon 2010. That's where Amazon UK is. Amazon UK is all toys, all books, you know, really strong, really books, really strong toys, some grocery, very not so great in shoes and clothing and all that. You know what I mean? A lot of specialty stuff. It's not as robust. So that's the vision that you can take. You can say, I know where this market's going to go, so I can be there first.
Because you've already seen it here is what you're alluding to, right?
Exactly.
So it's going to play out there. Do you sell in Canada at all?
No, I don't. Question gets asked that of me a lot. And the reason why I don't like Canada is because it's only 35 million people.
Okay.
And the paperwork and the process there is almost as heavy as doing Europe.
Where there's how many people?
35 million versus 750 million in EU proper, and then there's another half a million that they reach out to. So you've got over a billion people that you're hitting.
So the odds are a little better.
It's just Canada is like number 8 on my list of things to hit. The problem with developing a new market is – the way Amazon sets up their platforms is that's an entirely new business, which means you've got to stock inventory, you know, and that's an expensive part. We're still a physical process. You've got to have inventory to make money. And, you know, so for me to build up inventory in Canada for 35 million people is like, you know.
What percentage of your business is private label now?
Almost zero.
Okay, so you're bringing known products to Europe profitably.
Yeah, because it's American products work over there. We're selling American products to expats. We're taking, things that haven't. What we do is we really where the commoditization of a product hasn't occurred. So, or where the real value of a product divorces itself from its perception. So that's
so. Give me an example. Give me an example of one. Go back to something stupid. Something Elsa you know
doll.
Not gonna
Elsa doll.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, right now I can buy an Elsa doll for what? I don't know, $6-$7, right?
Yeah.
But 2 years
and they're
ago,
everywhere.
And they're everywhere. But 2 years ago, they were worth, I don't know, $50-$60, right?
Right.
And that's a supply and demand thing, but the product itself didn't change. So I don't know if that proves my point very well.
But could you still bring that product to Europe?
Yeah, it still moves over there, but it's that market's coming down. Where we have an advantage is where a worldwide viewpoint works from an arbitrage standpoint is not all markets have the same level of supply and demand. And so just like in the U.S. where you find a Walmart that's rural or a store that's rural that has too much of something, and we relocate it and add liquidity and put it into a marketplace that has greater demand, and we make money in that movement, that arbitrage. The same thing happens from the U.S. to the U.K. or vice versa. We actually bought products in the U.K. and brought them back into the U.S. because the market had shifted. The demand for that product, it was a Halloween costume, had it reversed itself. So we were actually buying them in Europe and bringing them back here into the U.S. because they were going crazy.
That's incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But
I told everybody.
You asked about private label. What we do is we're concentrating on more of this thing we call brown label.
All right. So, well, let's do this.
Yeah, go
I'm
ahead.
Take us to break because you're blowing my mind again. I mean,
okay.
It just again, you are so out there, so far ahead on this, and it just, I mean, it's meant as a compliment. Trust me. It is just so impressive. No, it really is because. You know, you get that, you know, that you're talking pretty high up there. And I think people are catching on, but it's just, this is the way your mind thinks. And I, you know, a couple of years ago we were hanging out and you were talking like this and it's, your results are there. So let's take a quick break. I want to come back and I want to hear about brown label and I want to hear, you know, how, you know, where you get this from. So, oh, let's take a break.
All right.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Seller Essentials, essential business solution for online sellers. Whether you sell general merchandise on Amazon or eBay, private label your own product, or if your focus is selling books, wholesale products, or liquidation lots, let Seller Essentials be your online resource for all things e-commerce. Essential resources, essential solutions, Seller Essentials, the internet's premier venue for online professional. Visit SellerEssentials.com. For more information, that's SellerEssentials.com. Man, I told you this dude is smart. You know, think about your mind being able to think that way. His mind is geared towards that arbitrage. Everything about it is finding a better price for that particular product. So his ability to do that in this world is really, really his biggest strength. I think the other cool thing that Steve talks about is he's going where the money is. He's selling in Europe, as we talk about, because that is untapped market. As he said, it's the Amazon when it was a wild, wild west. There weren't many sellers. There weren't enough products there. So you were able, if you could bring a product to market, you were able to sell it. And so that's why he's there. And let me tell you, I follow smart guys, so guess where we're going. It's a really great interview. He's just got so much information. Let's get back into the podcast. And we're back, and we are talking with Steve Sawyer, and I'm still blown away because, you know, it's just so cool to see somebody so passionate and so into it. And you've been doing this for a long time. I mean, you've been at you were trading commodities 20 years ago.
Yep.
And you're trading commodities today, right?
Yeah, arbitrage. People think of it as a product, right? I'm a product. I want to buy a product and then sell it, and I want to build that channel, and I want to retire and have a post office box that people send money to. But they forget that they're not moving products. It's the skill of recognizing the delta, the difference of advantage, of opportunity there. That's the real art or skill that you're bringing to the market.
So say that again. The real skill is recognizing the value?
The delta, the
or
difference.
The delta, the difference between.
Yep, and of it, it's the arbitrage, the value, the marketplace difference of opportunity, the soundbite concept, right? Recognizing the I don't know.
No, you got it. I think you get it. I mean, it's that skill set. And, you know, is it getting harder to recognize, do you think, or is it getting easier?
It's the same.
It's the same. So no matter how many new people are coming into market, do you feel like it's getting harder or easier? Your business is up 4X. So I guess you're going to tell me no, Steve. The more people that come in, that's great, but I'm going to stay ahead of them, hence the reason I'm in Europe right now, right? You're going where the market is.
Yeah. I'm trying to build a system that makes money, right? And it doesn't matter what we move, widgets or whatever. It's we recognize the value of, of the arbitrage, right? The windows of opportunity. And so many people forget that arbitrage is a temporary window of opportunity, which means it's not going to remain. Everything moves to commoditization, right?
Okay, so everybody's complaining about those spiraling prices and somebody killing the market. You know, the price, I was making $50 and now I'm making 35 cents. How could they afford to stay in business? That's what people are saying, right? You're saying that's a natural progression?
Absolutely. It's a natural curve of the evolution of a product, right? And if you live and die on a product without developing or creating new opportunities or anything, it eventually goes to a commodity. There's a life curve of a product. So
is that curve accelerate? Does that curve accelerate as technology gets introduced? As you know, when I see a price tracker pop up on my phone from Keepa saying, "Hey, a product you're tracking has fallen below the price you wanted."
I don't know. I mean, that's a great question, but I think we're still cemented in the physical world, and things have to be made, things have to be shipped, things have to be consumed. There's, if you read Gladwell, you've got the tipping point concepts and all that kind of stuff. So I think there's a natural timeline of evolution, and I think it's that, 12 to 18 months,
Okay, so you don't think it's accelerating. Maybe we're noticing it more. Maybe that's a better way to say it right now. Okay, so tell me what brown label. I get white label. I get that concept. Tell me what a brown label is.
So it's just something we came up with because we realized that we can take existing products, and it's called bundling, right? But it's bundling, but it's taking existing products and putting them in a brown box. Yeah, that's why we call it brown label, and finding that magic that makes it move, right? And instead of having to go out and private label something, it's bundling, and but we call it here brown label, so we can So
a little more sexy sounding than bundling. So let's use an example. Valentine's Day is coming up, right? Or I just saw somebody do chocolate syrup. Let's do that. Sugar-free chocolate syrup and sugar-free caramel syrup, right? Or peanut butter, I guess would be a good example, right? And so you would put those two in a box and you would say, hey, I've got this great, chocolate peanut butter mix, right? Or something like that. Is that what your concept is?
Exactly.
And so you're taking that to market in Europe where none of that exists?
Correct. So, but we also doing it in the U.S. too. There's an evolution of a market. Europe, it would work, but it's not the lowest hurdle to go over. Europe's hurdles are just getting the products there and finding the products that move. The brown label works better in the U.S. because it's a more mature marketplace, and so there's more competition on the individual level.
And okay, so somebody could go buy the chocolate on their own, and they can buy the caramel or peanut butter on their own. You're giving them the convenience, and that still sells in the U.S. Fair?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I get that. And so now with Europe, while it would work there, that's not the low hanging fruit. The low hanging fruit is just getting the darn chocolate over there.
Correct.
Right, because it's just not there yet. So let's talk about that. So how are you getting the scale of material to Europe? I mean, you're moving a lot of product. Are you importing directly to there? All? Are you shipping from the U.S.? Are you sourcing in other countries and you have a third-party warehouse over there?
Right now, we're still doing mostly air. We're looking at partial container work, you know, pallets over there. The concern that we have with that is it really limits our ability to arbitrage, which it takes our window. We can ship product from the U.S. and get it. Here's the time that we work. We can buy product here in the U.S. on a Wednesday, ship it by 4 o'clock on Wednesday, and it's for sale in my U.K. warehouse on Friday.
Are you kidding?
And so when there's a movement in a marketplace and we talk about getting something there and taking advantage of a hot product, and that's – so let's – we like an Elsa doll is a great example. Once all the orders are set and all the products shipping all over the world, it takes 35 business days or 35 days for it to go via container, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's say they under forecast demand in a certain area of the world, say Germany, and everybody wants Elsa, right? Well, what happens is there's a creation of demand and the price goes up, and then it becomes advantageous for us to airship it in. But we have to be able to do it in a timely fashion. And, for example, after Thanksgiving, or that window, that 3-week window that happens everywhere in the world because Christmas is coming, you know, the only way to get it there, and we can take advantage in 48 hours and have it there.
And, well, let me ask that question. So, you know, when things completely come to a crawl in the U.S., do you end up at a crawl in Europe too? Or are you still able to take advantage of it because there's not that huge volume going in yet?
Well, that's a good question. Europe is different. It's different. And that's why you have to have movement. So Europe, there's that component, like definitely, like we sold, there's what they call distance selling thresholds. So we sold almost no toys into Spain this year, except for in November and December. And all of a sudden in November, December, we sold our entire distance selling threshold, which is 35,000 euros in less than 30 days. And so that marketplace is very holiday specific and toy specific, and it doesn't move for us. You know, that opportunity doesn't move year round for us. It does for others, I'm sure. And other products are more consistent, more staple-based over there. But the problem with the European market is that it's not as robust, which means if you send something over there that market's not ready for, it's just going to sit there.
Yeah, and that's the question, right? So how are you marketing over there, right? I mean, is Amazon as prevalent, you know, here? You know, somebody says something, oh, they look it up on Amazon, right? I mean, that's right. It. That's what they do. Or they Google it, and Amazon's the number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 search, right?
Yeah.
What happens in Europe?
Doesn't happen that way. It's not as robust. Amazon is not as strong as it is here. It's not the buyers don't think the same way there in Europe yet. And so
it's not quite the U.S. that where you could send anything, you know, the early days of Amazon, you could send anything there and it would sell. They're not there yet, or are they past that point yet? Or will they never get there?
I don't know. That's a good question. It's just certain things. We have certain things we send over there that think it would sell, and they just sit. And the market's just not ready for them yet.
So what happens when they just sit? Now, you gave an example where you pulled a product back because this market was taken off with the product and it wasn't working there, so you brought it back.
We didn't pull it back. We bought it over there and brought it back.
Okay. So you bought it and brought it back. Do you have any European employees?
No, but we have a warehouse over there.
Okay, so you're using one of the third-party warehouses.
Yep.
I interviewed Nicole Cleave, and she talked about there are many companies that represent U.S. Distributors. What do you do with your product when it doesn't sell over there? Are you liquidating it, destroying it? You're not bringing it back to the U.S. generally, right?
No. Okay. You don't go deep in the stuff that you're not too sure about, right? So you just burn it, right? You destroy it. And
okay, so you're building that model in. I mean, have you figured out what your percentage of burn is generally? I mean, are you, you know, it's kind of like a landlord, right? They use an 80% occupancy rate, right? They just figure, hey, 20% of the time the place is going to be empty statistically, right? Do you have that figured out?
Not yet. In fact, that's actually one of the things that we're working on in the next 2 months is really we really focused on that growth and throwing a lot of movement and wide range of product and scope to find out what we understood. And then now we're going to take that data and really look at it and, you know, monetize it better. So
does the U.S. Market, advertising market, affect the European market? I mean, you know, back in the old days when jeans go into Japan, for example, right? You know, the old Levi's, a red label, red tag Levi's still are highly sought in Japan. And it was the influence of wanting to be like the U.S. Is that still there in Europe, do you think?
You know, it's a great question. I'm not really sure. It's really weird.
So I'm just wondering if it's getting from movies and things like that, and they see that. You know, I wonder those things. Or has Facebook, you know, we have family, my wife's Italian, and we have family in Italy, and there's Facebook friends, you know, so they see stuff that we do here. I wonder if that's influencing the market in some way, and that's creating some demand. Peeps, you know, marshmallow Peeps, for example, or something like that. Hey, it's Easter, you know, we have Peeps, and they're like, what is a Peep? I just wonder if those things are happening.
I still believe that. What's interesting is I love retail arbitrage, and I'll always do a portion of that. I'll always walk the store because that's where the buying decisions are made. That's where the synergy is created at that moment. And even toy manufacturers are trying to understand it and fail. And it happens in Europe. And so that if you read like Outliers, right? Or mm-hmm. Tipping Point, Gladwell, you know, the decision makers that are happening in a culture, you know, those one out of eight people that are influencers that are making those decisions are so important. And it's happening in the store or it's happening when they're watching a show. We try to, as marketers, to influence it, but it still happens at that level.
And so how do you tap into that, right? I mean, that's the real of the art. If you could figure out how to tap into that, to be one of the first to recognize that. Now, I interviewed Irma de Rojas, and she spoke a lot about that she's out in – oh, man, I'll tell
she's
you.
Awesome.
She is beyond awesome. I mean, she is really – I mean, I think about that more and more, our conversation, because I was just, you know, again, blown away. But she brought up some great points. She's like, of course I'm a Facebook friend on – you know, following Disney, and I follow all the movies, and I'm in a whole bunch of groups, and I'm watching parents talk about trends, saying, oh man, my kids want this, and my kids are, and so she sees that, she recognizes the trend, guess what, she takes advantage of that trend, right? So you know, I guess you can invest the time, because it's there, the data is there.
Correct.
Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you balance your time? How would you approach it? So tell me how you would approach that.
Approaching I think, you know, we it's important to spend a portion of your day just being in the stream. I use the grizzly bear attitude.
I'm thinking that I'm going back to your days of arbitraging when you were looking at weather patterns and all the crazy things that affected the market.
No, you don't talk to weather patterns. You talk to people. Weather
right.
patterns are important, but you talk to people. And so first thing we would do in the morning as a commodity trader is I would call all the different producers and sellers in a portion of the first 30 minutes of the day, and we would talk. And most of it was talking about social stuff, but we'd ask them their price and what they're buying and selling and this and that. And that formulates an idea of what's going on. And then that's where that experience and being in the stream, the momentum, you recognize this pattern. It's this guy mentions this, and that guy was talking about this, and all of a sudden you're making a decision and you start moving. And the same thing happens when we're making decisions about buying product. My mom lives in Orlando. She's a great lady, and she's doing FBA, and I will go sourcing with her, and she'll go, oh, maybe I'll buy one. And I go, clear shelf. And she goes, well, why would you clear the shelf? I saw the same data you did. And I said, I just know. I did this with this product, and I like this product, and this, that, that. Let's clear a shelf. And that's just experience, you know. So it's feeling the river.
You know, it's interesting you say you talk to people. Dan Miller, I interviewed, and Dan said when three people ask me the same question about something, I recognize that that's an opportunity. Because if three seems to be his market, he's like three in a row or three at a given time are asking about the same question, looking for something that they can't find. I smell opportunity. So you're describing the same thing. You've seen Elsa, you know, Disney princess dolls sell well in the past. You're seeing a movie blowing up. You're seeing the price is probably as low as it's going. Clear the shelf, right? Or whatever your parameters are for making that decision.
Yeah. Or example, like Valentine's Day is coming up, right? Well, mm-hmm. If you go to Walmart on the first day they put out the Valentines, scan them and see which one is missing one or two. That's the one to buy.
Simple.
It's simple.
Because you said parents are looking for those, and they went in and said, Ninja Turtles are hot this year. The kids want that or whatever. Yeah.
And they're buying it early, and they're you know, they don't want to be boxed out. It's important, right? It's early, you know, a canary, early bird, you know, early market indicator. Yeah.
Oh, man. Dude, I'm telling you, I love talking to you. I can't wait. Are you going to ScanPower Conference, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my God. I can't wait.
I told Chris, I said, hey, if you want me to speak, I'll speak. You know, I just like that whole place there, the energy, everything that happens with it. I love it to death. I can't say enough good things about it. You know,
well,
just what
would
happened.
You say that what benefit? Because you and I were together at CES a couple of years ago, and then I've seen you. We were at CES again this past year.
Yep.
And so you make the travel. You tend to invest in yourself. What do you find is the best thing that you get from these conferences?
Oh, that's easy. Everybody says the same thing. Networking.
Relationships.
Yeah, relationship networking. Yeah. But I always feel the same way. The conference is always, man, I don't want to go. I don't want to spend the time. My business is doing this. What am I going to do? And then I get there and I have the $1,000-a-minute conversations. And I go, I'm so glad I went. I can't wait to go until next year. And and you're pumped and energized. And it's just – and I remind myself that that's nothing but hitting the cash register and having fun, you know?
You know, and you're talking at levels that you can't talk about with your employees, right? And so you can have some pretty high-level questions. You describe a $1,000 minute or a discussion?
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me what that is.
Well, you're just sitting there talking to a guy. Well, me being in Europe is a great example of that. I remember talking to a guy, and it was the same CES that you and I were at, and sitting on a couch one evening, and he was just talking about, hey, I sent this box over to Europe, and this product I bought for $1.25 at Walmart is selling for $10 over there. And every box of 12 I send over there sells out in less than 3 days. I said, I got to go to Europe.
Yeah. Let me think about that. Wait, you're describing something pretty easy, right? Because what would that $1.25 product sell in the U.S. for, right? $4, right? Or if you're lucky.
Yes. Yeah. And that's the conversation evolved from there. So tell me more about that. And I just said, I'll swing at the pitch. And I just started sending a product over there. So
how hard was the you know, I know there's there are barriers to entry. There's some complications. How hard is it to get there? I mean, if you put your nose down to the grindstone to do the work, is it that hard?
No. Everything I look at everything kind of the same way. Everything, you got to embrace the suck. Everything has the 60 days of suck. I'll let that sink in.
That's going to be a quotable, embrace the suck.
You're back
to the vacuum cleaners. You got those darn vacuum cleaners again. See?
Yep.
It's coming back to it.
I think it's military, but yeah. The problem is everything we start is you have to build the inertia because everything wants to pull you back. And you've got to deal with the 60 days of doubt and energy and inertia problems and everything that screams at you that this is stupid or it won't work. And you just got to kind of go, I got 60 days of suck. I don't care. I'm just going to keep the ball moving and keep putting gas in the car and just keep driving. And it works, you know? And so if you're committed to something, you just got to go, you know?
Love it. Oh my God. I love it. Love it. Love it. I think, you know, you're going to see more people deciding to make progress. That's all it really is, right? They have to make that decision in their mind and turn it on and say, I'm going to move forward. So tell me how you're going to move forward. What are you going to do? You had a 4X year. I mean, you crushed it. You crushed it. What's next?
Yeah, we're looking to take last year's numbers and double them this year with a target of four times the year after that. So
done the math. Wow.
Yeah. Everything we did this year, you know, like we're turning in our numbers to our accountant and everybody's, you know, online a little bit, everybody's talking about their great numbers and stuff. And my bottom line doesn't look that good because I went from no employees and running out of my garage to eight employees, you know what I mean? And trying to run two inventories more, you know, really building the foundation to get to where I want to go. And so we are not running at full capacity, but it's expensive to invest in that infrastructure.
But if you don't invest in the infrastructure, you're never going to be able to get there.
I don't think you can get there as fast. You know, you have to make it all. What we do is we manage our assets, and that asset is time. First of all, mm-hmm. we have to manage. And my first goal and foremost this year, the last 6 months, my battle cry has been, I want to fire myself. I want to find somebody better at doing what I'm doing so I can hire them and fire
me. Have you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I haven't packed. Amazon did this new box thing, right, where they require you to list the box at a certain thing. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is because I don't do that anymore. I think I understand it, but it's not critical to my world. So I have somebody who's an expert and really good at doing that. I've actually had, you know, three people. I have not packed a box to Europe in 5 months because I got a guy who does that, right?
How did you find him?
Find him?
Yeah.
Where
I'm going to go with the conversation is, what skill set specifically led you to believe that he would be the right fit that turned out to be right? Again, you recognize value, so I'm guessing that you recognize something in him, and I'm trying to pull that out of you. What is that?
I've had great success in two places. Athletes, committed lifetime athletes, and I'll expand on that, and high school kids. I like both those marketplaces for employees. Hmm. And the reason why is the guy that I got working for me is he just retired from minor league hockey, right? Pro hockey. And their work ethic and dedication and consistency and effort and all that stuff is so fantastic. And I've actually had three or four hockey players work for me, and it's been phenomenal. I mean, just –
because you're in that world. I know you're in that world.
But I think the same thing – transfers into, I see the same thing and I'm not saying it's just athletes, but it's that commitment to a cause that doesn't have a guarantee. Mm. And that dedication and hard work and effort and pain and all the things that come with the 60 days of suck, because every employee encounters it too. Right. And you want, that's the thing you want them to work through. You want them to embrace the process so they can come out trained on the other end. And the other thing I love about high schoolers is they're so fresh.
Right.
They're goofy. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, no, I get it.
but they come in fresh and they're energetic and they just don't have any hard limitations on them.
Right. They haven't been boxed completely. Right. And I think that's probably more true today than it was back when we were kids. You know, you were put on a roll and that was your limit and you're going to be that way. As my wife always said, you know, her father told her, oh, you're going to be a secretary. That's what you're going to be, you know, and that was what she was going to be.
Yeah.
And so kids today, they don't have those limits because they can see pretty much everything, right? The world is not that little box on the desk. It's in their pocket and they have it 24/7, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, but the funnest part about that is like with the high schoolers, I pay them too much. I pay them too much. It you know, I pay about 25% over the going rate here in Alabama, right? And I'm happy to do it. And they're like, they can't, you know, I get the best of the crop. I get an energetic workforce that's happy to be here, right? And they feel valued, you know, it's just wild.
Do you have an incentive plan for them, or is it just straight hourly rate?
It's just straight hourly. I think I think you can build the intensity in your structure with this business. The intensity is the interesting thing about where I am right now is I talk about is that everybody in my warehouse is going somewhere else. They have a desire to be something else. They're only here for a part time, and that's true for a certain amount of time, and that's true with everybody. We're just on a journey. We don't end up someplace. If we are, I don't want you. If you're, I don't want you to be, this is the only thing, I put stuff in boxes and send it here so other people can buy it out of boxes. I don't want you. I want you want passion going someplace else, and how can I help you get where you want to go, right? If you're a high schooler, you're a high school kid, you want to go do this, so let me help you get there. But, you know, let's learn together, and I, that symbiotic relationship is so exciting. You know, when people come to work, it's exciting. It's fun. It's not the work. It's everybody's going somewhere.
Love it, man. Now you've got to figure it out. I'm excited for you. I'm excited for you. I can't wait to have this conversation a year from now and say, okay, I got it in. I recorded it. Here's what you said. Now let's talk about where you are. That's awesome. All right. So give me something that, you know, you mentioned Malcolm Gladwell a couple times, and I've read both books, and I think that, you know, you know, it's become such a mainstream, the Tipping Point, you know. Give me something else that you think our readers, our listeners would use, to either reading or a podcast that they could listen to help them get this thought process down, to keep on the right thought that, you know, we're arbitraging, temporary, we're moving, it's got to go.
I'm trying to think of stuff that I read, you know, that's really, really innovative. There's a book out there called Blue Ocean Strategy. I love that. I love that. That's the idea of going where other people aren't. And, right. And the greatest example in the book that I can remember is this idea of Cirque du Soleil. They reinvented the idea of the circus in the idea of a theater and able to charge $50 and $60 for a circus ticket by redefining what the circus is. That's Blue Ocean, right? They took so that's a fantastic. The other thing that I read was a book called Pitch Anything. If you want to understand the real art of negotiation and deals, that's a phenomenal book. I like both of them, but they're books, and people don't really go out and buy books. You know, if you can get them on Kindle.
They can listen to them on Audible. They can listen to them on Audible.
Both those books, I listen in the car. I love listening to them. Pitch Anything is probably the most exciting one to read, to listen to the car. I like that one.
Okay. All right, good. All right, so, you know, the goal of this podcast is to help people move forward, right? So what I'm looking for, you know, there's somebody who's selling $20,000 or $30,000 a month, and they're, you know, they're doing it, but they're hitting that wall, right? Their 60 days of suck has become 120 days of suck or 200. You know, they just can't get past that. Give us a tip or trick that you think that our listeners could put in place to help them get past that point of stuck.
Okay, so I use the two guys in the tent theory, right? Is two guys are in the middle of the night in a tent, and all of a sudden this grizzly bear's coming up on them. And then one guy gets up, and the other guy gets up. He goes, let's go. The other guy says, hold on, let me put on my shoes. And he goes, what are you doing your shoes, tying your shoes on? You're not going to be able to outrun the bear. And he goes, I don't need to outrun the bear. I need to outrun you. And and the idea is remember, I love high hurdles. I love the opportunity for failure, because the higher the hurdle is, the less people will get over it. So the harder I work to get over it, and once I get over it, there's a lot longer run time for me. That's why I like going into Europe, right? So just love high hurdles, embrace them.
Mm-hmm. Man.
And statistically, we know that failure, the sheerest measure of success is how many times you fail. So my goal is to fail as fast as possible. I want to fail fast and hard and small, so I can, you know, if you tell me success is 10 failures, well, I want to get those 10 failures out of the way.
Yeah, you might as well get them over with. But you don't roll it all on 7. You're not betting everything. You're not making fatal decisions.
No,
because you're probing. Again, you know, I think, you know, early on in the conversation, we talked about probing. You had mentioned that 20% of those sales over there are going to be home runs. That's what your goal. So that means 80% or not. That means they're either mediocre or they suck. Right.
Yeah.
It's one of those. Yeah. I mean, those are pretty much your three options. But that 20% can be so spectacular. And again, as you kind of alluded to, you're doing you're going wide, not deep. How many SKUs do you have over in Europe?
We're probably sitting at about 350.
Okay. And that's manageable for your size operation, you feel?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That's good. I appreciate that because contextually, I think, you can't be all things because there is a place that it's just too much. I mean, it's not like you can get control of itself.
Oh, okay. my greatest problem right now is managing the velocity. And the problem, if you don't manage the velocity, you get hammered by the pennies. And so the pennies will kill you. And so we're really right now trying to assess, you know, how hard the pennies are hammering us because we grew so much last year that, you know, there's so much slippage and inefficiency and,
right.
And you know, it's you got to pay tuition one way or another, you know.
Well, would you say of your 350, is it the old 80-20 rule? Or are 70 of them your killers and the others are okay or not?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that plays true, too. So, and you know, the big challenge is, as you alluded to, that there's a 12 to 18 month window. So while that 20% is spectacular today, they're somewhere in that 12 to 18 month range, right? That means they could be on their way out tomorrow. And so how do you figure that? I mean, there's a lot to consider, and I just love that you got the mind for it. If there's anybody's going to figure it out, it's you. All right, best way to get in touch with you if people want to reach out and have questions?
Facebook.
Okay.
Facebook.
And I will have that link.
And kind of, you know, the other thing is I've never monetized what I do. Not that I won't ever do it in the future. You probably have to contact me. But the problem that I have with, like, coaching is that I just like talking to people, you know. So, I mean, I'd help you just because you're you, you know.
Yep. We're a real deal. A couple of years ago, I'm proof to say. Same guy. Man, I appreciate you taking the time. I know you're busy. I appreciate what you're doing. I love the fact that you are there for people, and I've seen you answer a lot of questions and help a lot of people. And so just can't wait to see you coming up in March, and we are definitely going to have a great conversation. Hey, thanks so much.
Oh, man, you're doing a great job. I love your stuff.
Oh, I appreciate that. Very kind. Hey, have a good night.
You bet. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. Again, you know, every time I talk with Steve, I think, wow, this guy really has it figured out. Very exciting. I'm very fortunate to be able to spend time with someone like that. And I hope you enjoyed it as much as I do. Check us out, e-commerce momentum website. Lots of stuff going on there. Hey, thanks and have a great night.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce momentum podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.